Thank you very much for inviting me to come and talk to you here. It's always difficult following my learned colleague Todd Vision in that tour de force that people sometimes feel a bit exhausted with the amount of work that he's been up to and some of the great successes that have been happening. I'm going to take this down a little bit. I work for the British Library and have done for about 2.5 years, but my background is not librarianship. My background is not publishing. My background is researcher. I'm not sure I can call myself a researcher anymore. I was brought into the library because the library saw the emerging data problems that were associated with the new implementations of technologies. And they said, what sorts of roles would an organization like the National Libraries or reference libraries or research libraries be able to play in this field? And so I was brought in and we set up a program, the Datasets program. There's some URLs at the end that you can have a look. I presume these slides are going to be made available. And I encourage you to go in and have a look and see what we're doing. We've got about 6 projects on the go at the moment, and I've been asked here to talk about one in particular, and that's a European project, a European-funded project under the Framework 7 program called ODE, or Opportunities for Data Exchange. This project was the brainchild of a group of people led by Salvatore Mele at the CERN installation in the French-Swiss border. I can't remember. And it was in response to this report that came out of the European Union, Riding the Wave, how Europe can gain from the rising tide of scientific data. And there's a very almost nautical analogies that are made about this massive amount of data that is either on the horizon or currently falling down in this deluge. Talking to Salvatore, the reasons that CERN can deal with the types of data that are coming out of their particle accelerators, most notably the LHC, is that they know what they can throw away. Now, there are facilities in the building right at the moment, and this is just in one particular discipline, where they're actually not going to be able to know what to throw away. And at CERN, they were able to throw away 95% of the data because they didn't need it. And they're starting to look at petabyte-level data preservation requirements at regular intervals. That's only going to go up, and this is in one discipline. So they said, okay, let's have a look at this, and let's start to unpack this data deluge. The way that you have fun and make the most use of either a wave in a sea of knowledge is to be able to either harness it or ride it. So the next analogy was coming in. We're riding the wave of the data deluge. And Salvatore said, we want to talk particularly at the problems of preservation, access, and reuse. We want to unpack these issues into a series of projects that will inform the way that the European Commission and the member states of the European Commission start to address these very serious concerns and increasing concerns. Now, growing up where I did in Australia, it's all very well to ride the wave, to have fun in the sea, to harness its power. There are dangers involved in this, and this courtesy of Universal Studios is probably one that's quite pertinent to Australians and anyone that lives in a breeding ground of this particular nasty. So the idea was that the opportunities for data exchange would reveal opportunities. In order to do so, we had to understand what the risks were. Now, there's a pretty big risk for this swimmer, as we can see. Do similar things exist in this deluge of data that we're facing? Well, you know, I think depending on what particular roles you assign to our lovely little shark or the rather passive swimmer, you can say there are lots of opportunities and there are lots of risks. But what's missing is a way of approaching this. So we focused in this project in data sharing as a key potential. This is a very hot topic in lots of different areas. Mark Thorley from Research Councils UK will be talking in the next plenary, the next session about this. Research Councils in the UK in particular have been quite responsive in getting together a whole series of principals to help advise the recipients of their funding. There's this direction to move away from data mining to being able to reuse in a useful way. We touched a little bit about the data citation process. DataCite is something that we're running out of the British Library for UK data centers that really answer this whole idea of declarations or existence of ownership. If something's lost, you can either know that it existed or never know that it existed. And actually creating a record of science, a complete record of science and a complete record of research in particular, you have to be able to declare and have a record of what was at least around. That's a very interesting segue into preservation, which I don't really want to get into right at the moment. We might if we have some time at the end. And then the last three points in the top section there, accountability, authenticity, and validity. These are things that scholarly publications have fulfilled quite well. But one thing is clear, as Salvatore always says, we're not being clear at all. He got together to try and do something about this. And this was about understanding and realizing the potential that existed here. So we separated the themes, and we started to focus down and try and unpick the situation in these particular themes. And in order to do this, we put together a band of brothers and sisters. Predominantly, actually, these were all the people, and collectively we're known as ODE, the Opportunities for Data Exchange. We've been going for about a year now, from a 24-month project, so we're about halfway through. You can see that we have representatives from quite hardcore big data science facilities like the STFC and CERN, a couple of libraries, a few clubs like the APA, and publisher associations like STM and LIBA. And five key questions jumped out as soon as we started to plan this. We turned those directly into five themes, and I'll just run through the themes quite quickly. So the first one was a sociological theme, trying to identify the drivers that would promote successful data sharing. With drivers often come barriers, otherwise it would be quite chaotic, so we needed to understand what they were and how they can be lowered, if they need to be lowered, and if the European Commission as an organization, or any of the member states or anyone in the rest of the world that is interested in this activities can be informed by. It was an outreach theme. It's the sort of stuff that I'm doing. All of us go out and we talk to different stakeholder engagement activities and promote what we're doing. But also advising our findings and encouraging people to have a look at them seriously and trying to implement them. Now, what I'm not going to do is tell you what our findings are, because I want you to all go off and read our report. That's part of the third theme that arrives here, and this is the one that I've been particularly involved in, the scholarly communication theme. My background, as I said, is not librarianship or scholarly communication. It is research, well, it's not scholarly publishing. It's scholarly communication in so much as I was a researcher. But what we did was we said, well, how is the way that data and scholarly communication changing? It's always been there. Todd put up the reference from DLib by F.K. Schmidt from STM, who talked about how data and publication always belong together. I don't think that's changed. I think there are different ways to address it, and I think one of the things that we can do is start to roll down the roles and responsibilities that evolve here. And in order to do that, we had to have a look at what's going on, what's changing. We're hearing a lot of stuff from the presentations that we've heard so far and for the rest of the day about how publishing is responding and using technology. I was in the session yesterday about this decision as to whether we're having a transformation or revolution or an evolution. I've been disrupted to think actually it's probably a little bit less than an evolutionary step. But anyway, I'm very happy to discuss that further. And actually, we wanted to be able to maximize this. So what changes in these roles would fully realize the potential that exists here? So identifying the potential, identifying the risks, identifying the barriers and benefits, and the outreach. A critical mass theme. How many organizations, or how do you measure the social changes that go on, that Todd spoke about, in order to get take-up of the changes that are occurring? I think that's a really difficult thing to pin down, I'm quite glad I'm not part of that work package. But it was all about defining what the criteria are for achieving the sustainability, which is something that really needs to be addressed. And then finally, my favorite, why should we bother? Data and publication have existed together for a long time. Sharing occurs between peers that know each other, but not peers that are in competition. It's quite passive. Technology hasn't changed the way people share. It's just made it a little bit more efficient. Is it something that we need to influence, or are we happy for it to evolve along itself? That's actually a forward-thinking work package that is just starting off now in the second half of the ODE project. So, what does this mean for us? What does it mean for you as a collection of publishers? And what does it mean for me as someone who wants to facilitate researchers' activities through a library, or me as a researcher, or Todd as a researcher who's generating this data? So, work package 4, that's the one that we're leading, and these are the people that are involved in it. You can see that it's quite highly biased with libraries, but FK keeps us all in check. And actually, I'm not representing the library, I'm representing a viewpoint of a researcher who was essentially an accidental librarian. We're in the scholarly communication theme, and what we're interested in is the way that data... I don't like the title of this, Data Enters Scholarly Communication. I put it up there because that's what they came up with. Data, as I said, has always been part of scholarly communication. What we're seeing is we need to understand how it is changing its role and its effort in scholarly communication. And this has to do with what what Todd discussed a little bit earlier about the way that data and scholarly publication can exist together. And looking at this value chain, because the value chain appears to be changing in an evolutionary way rather than a transformational way. And really, the end products for what we're doing here is going to be a series of reports that talk about the different roles and how to fully realize this potential. We started with this crazy diagram that actually, if you look at it for a little while, you just think, actually, it's utterly meaningless, because all it does is identify who the stakeholders are and actually that everyone talks to everyone else. Now, we know that that's not really true. And we know that the arrows that indicate this interaction are different for different stakeholder groups with different purposes and different ideas. So we binned that quite quickly, but I put it up there just to remind me of how far we've come. So we split up our first report into looking at evidence of the integration of data and publication. And we look at three perspectives: libraries, researchers, publishers. And we ruthlessly tied libraries and data centers together because the librarians present were quite clear that this was a role that the libraries could play. In two minds, in this country at least, we're quite well addressed with data centers that are grown up about the way that they look after data. But that being said, it's a European project. It's not the case in all countries. And we saw this earlier, and we actually used this as a good starting point. Jim Gray's pyramid that talks about a multidimensional rendering in 2D of raw data, derived data, literature, and how data fits into all of that. You can go up in terms of size, you can go up in terms of focus, you can go up and down in terms of expectations. It's an interesting framework over which to frame our questions. But what we did was we took it, we changed it, and called it our own. And we'll come to that in a second, because we assessed the different activities that we found in our research by a series of criteria that specifically refer to data, but can be expanded and actually more generally looks at scholarly communication. So the fact that data are available, the scientific paradigm is that if you conduct research, as a social contract, you make this available. You make it available through your communication, and you make it available for validity. It has to be available. We have quite pervasive statistics on the fact that that's pretty difficult to say that we're doing a good job about that as a community. But even if you did have a paper, being able to find something, if you didn't have a publication, is something that we were very interested in. Once found, how do you interpret it? I've heard someone say that a publication is just a very, very complicated metadata record about a data set, which is the evidence that underpins the publication. But being able to interpret it is absolutely essential, and anyone involved in data will realize that. Once it's interpreted, is it able to be reused? Has it been codified in a way that doesn't make it reusable? Is it understandable by the person, even if the record is there? Is it understandable by a machine if you're talking about plugging data and series of data into workflow engines? This whole idea about citability, with everyone being, not everyone, but with you being in this session, you're missing the session on DataCite by my colleague Tom Pollard. That's something that we're very interested in at the library and with DataCite, an international organization. And there's this very real problem of curation and preservation. The people that generate data don't generally have the time or resource to look after it. And one thing that's left off here that is something that I'm very interested in right at the minute and quite easily take the place and the role of our jaws in the slides several back is this whole idea of ownership and licensing. It's something that's not really addressed very well in data, in a data field at all. So, of course, we're not new. People have been doing this before, and actually the project that sat before the ODE was called Pass Insight, and it collected lots of survey-type data from a wide variety of stakeholders and put it all together into a bunch of analyses. It's available. Anyone Googling that will come across this. And it actually makes for very interesting reading. It creates numbers behind the suspicions that a lot of people had. So we used almost every single data source that we could find. From our backgrounds, took a particular view of it. This first report was run as a trial at the LIBERS 2011. Sorry, that's my that's my animation going really badly wrong. And this is to wake you up. We took all these sources, had a look at them, and said, actually, what we want to do is we want to change this pyramid and we want to call it our own. So we added another layer and we started to explain it a little bit more. We've stuck this in one dimension, in two dimensions now, but with one framework. We're talking about where data are collected and how they fit against the criteria that we have. So right at the bottom, our raw data and our data sets are unavailable. They're generally in the bottom of people's drawers. The next layer up is where they're actually a bit more made available, and often they can be found in data publications. Dryad is an example of that. The data centers from the Natural Environmental Research Council have great examples of how they're going to be creating data publications. Or it's data that's been referenced directly in an article with a DataCite DOI, and that article by that reference by default, and because DataCite only deals with people that look after data properly, will be available. The second top talks about how data can be explained in supplementary supplementary files, so data that's supplementary to publication rather than the top, which is data that are explained within the publications. It's directly relevant. And actually, that at the top of the pyramid is probably the least reusable. At the bottom of the pyramid, probably the most reusable, but unfindable. Okay, thank you. So I said I wasn't going to tell you about our major findings because I want you to go and read this report. It will be available shortly. Looking for ODE, you'll be able to find a way to do it. The three big opportunities that we found are listed here. Researchers always want credit for the work that they do. That's fitting with the idea that data is a research object in its own right that has an intellectual capacity that's probably greater than the publications that it support. For libraries and data centers, there's a clear changing role in the way that this can be made more available and findable. People use data centers, but they're usually one-way place. They're generally, in most disciplines, one-way points. And in particular, publishers, I think we've seen quite a few examples of how publishing is responding to the technology that's available to them, and particularly with data. I won't expand any more on that. I think I'd like to take some questions if we have some time at the end. But those were the three big changes, and there's a whole series of them as well. So actually, we think it's really quite fun. It's an exciting future ahead of us. A joined-up scholarly record is something that libraries should be supporting and safeguarding. Researchers believe that actually this should have been happening a long time ago, but researchers generally believe that about a lot of things. And actually, publishing has a very, very, very strong role to play of this as a well-established, a well-characterized, and a complete section of scholarly communication. So I'll leave it right there. There are some URLs up there for people's information. Ruthless plug for our ODE workshop at the APA conference this year in London on the 7th of November. And I'm sure David Giaretta would be very happy to take applications and registrations from all sorts of people. So thank you very much.
Can I ask you a question? I mean, we've been having supplementary data all of the 26 years that I've worked in publishing. Mm-hmm. It used to go to the British Library and is buried in caves in Boston Spa. Still available on paper,
yeah.
But nobody ever is going to digitize that and make it more freely available. Nobody would have the money to do that. In your study, have you done anything to look at what curation is worth, whether it's worth storing data for certain things over time? At the moment, it's inconceivable that you wouldn't want to store data from the Large Hadron Collider experiments, probably, because mm-hmm. they're so expensive to run. Mm-hmm. But that was probably the case for lots of the things that we used to do that now take a couple of hours to redo.
Yeah.
Has anybody thought about the costs and benefits in that sort of way?
So there is a lot of activity ongoing in addressing those very issues. And that I don't like talking about problems, but the challenges that we have is that data exists in very different ways. When I do a preservation talk, I usually start by talking about how working at the library, you can walk down the road and read the Rosetta Stone, which if you apply yourself, you should be able to read quite easily, and that's several thousand years old. I got my thesis on a CD that was submitted to the UCL 6 years ago, and I'm unlikely to get anything out of that at all. Is anyone interested in that? Well, they might be. There's a paper copy that sits in a couple of different places, probably. There's probably not an electronic version. We at the program have tried to shy away from making the judgments that are required to be made to decide what to throw away. I'm not sure that's something that we have a role to play with. I could be wrong. I'm happy to be proved wrong. But I think there's a value judgment there that has to come from somewhere else right at the moment.
Okay, any other questions for Max? If not, we'll move on. Thank you very much, Max. Thanks, well done.